Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Tom Bogert, Matt Doyle, David Goss. The mint is in the mug. I repeat, the mint has made it into the mug.
You didn't give me enough time to finish my life saver.
Yeah, you were there. Hey, what's up, boys? How's it going? I'm well rested. I'm a little punchy.
You are well rested. I actually had to turn the volume down.
Did you?
On that intro. Yeah, you came
that was
so
one of my
hot.
I was a very throaty. Oh, it was really
you could actually hear the ocean water.
Right.
That
right. I probably
salt is good.
Yeah, it's all the, you know, maybe even grains of sand sort of.
Yeah. You've been gargling brine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Quahogs.
Did you eat any seafood?
I did not have a single ounce of
so
seafood.
So you're just That book is shut for you.
No, it's not. I do enjoy certain things. I was in Cape Cod this weekend, thus the reference.
Like, he heard Cape Cod does a really fresh McDonald's fish filet.
No, would never touch the fish filet, to be fair. I will eat scallops. I'll eat oysters. Somehow we did not have any oysters while there. I'll put that down to my children's eating habits. Don't do fish. We'll eat shrimp. Yeah, that's about where we end. Octopus, like octopus.
Was shrimp a lower class food that became rich people, or only lobster?
Only lobster. My wife loves lobster rolls, and every time she gets one, I remind her that was essentially...
Does she get Maine style or Connecticut style?
What's the difference?
Maine is cold with trash and mayonnaise on it, and
not the one she
Connecticut
likes.
Is served appropriately. It's with warm butter. Lobster drizzled with butter in a Portuguese roll.
Yes,
yeah,
that's the one she prefers.
Yeah,
she's on the right side of history.
Maine lobsters are better. Connecticut lobster rolls are better.
Got it. Anyway, hey, it was a wonderful weekend on the Cape. I'll rely on all of you for the soccer talk. Catch me up if you don't mind. Ben Reich, you might remember from San Jose. He had one season ticket. This is just to illustrate the importance of Extra Time and how we influence people from coast to coast and perhaps even farther. He's already on the hook for two next year, so we're there. Good stuff from Ben. Thank you so much. And Tom, you're on the hook for about 30 minutes off the top of how Neymar can get to MLS. I heard from credible sources that he's coming to NYCFC and or other places. Please explain how that is possible and why everyone who says it's not is wrong.
I heard he's bringing a stadium with him.
Yeah. Papa
so he's going to start playing immediately.
It's like remember that Vancouver stadium they started
I
on?
I loved that stadium. Yeah. I loved that stadium.
Steve Nash's own.
Empire Field, I think.
Yeah. Empire Field.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the Neymar rumors was that article came out in France, and it was usually it'll be Galaxy, Miami, whatever, or Los Angeles to say something like that. They didn't even go to that length. They were just so lazy. They were like, one of the LA teams made an offer for Neymar. Hey, Al Hilal, while we're negotiating a contract, you better put a couple more zeros in here because one of the LA teams might be interested. We don't know who.
And credit their laziness. Here you are clicking on that French article.
And also, like, credit it worked because Al Hilal did apparently add another zero. Like,
did they need leverage for that?
Do you get equally upset when you see a rumor that's like, a Saudi Arabian club with no specific team name where you're like, yeah, like they're all the same thing? Do you get that upset?
Yeah.
Nice. Tom.
He's a man of specifics. He's a reporter.
Domino.
The rest of us, not so much. Leagues Cup, we're down to the semifinals. Philadelphia, Miami. It's the matchup we all dreamed of on the banks of the Delaware. 7 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday night. Apple TV, MLS
Season
Pass.
There was a little sarcasm in your voice. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Because we all, like, when we saw the brackets, we all thought, like, oh, Miami really could come out of the South.
Yeah,
100%. Like, that one is set up for them. And then Philly were clearly favorites in the East, though they didn't really play like it.
We sort of dreamed this up. Yeah. I don't know if I was like mocking the scriptwriter narrative or if I was just, you know, making inflection in my voice that was confusing.
Yeah, you contain multitudes,
yes,
Andrew.
Exactly.
You really
try to read me. It's not possible. I'm not an open book in that way.
I believe the power went out in Chester, Pennsylvania.
I saw that.
Not at the stadium only. In the whole area.
Yeah, I was trying to follow along on the MLS app, of course. What's going on?
Megawatt smile. Doyle liked that. That was a bit of a curveball.
I like that we've thrown it back to like two 2012 Vancouver Whitecaps references now.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Maybe Querétaro was on the hook for the bill, but like Camilo, money never came.
Yeah, he nailed it.
The exhale. Guys hated that.
Oh, Monterey's hosting, well, and their team A. Nashville's hosting Monterey, but Monterey got by LAFC in the end. That's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, so you just go back-to-back on those. Of course, pregame shows, MLS Season Pass, and the wrap-up. We'll catch up at the very, very end of it. We've been wondering what happens to the CONCACAF Champions Cup spots because Monterey's already qualified via their finish in the combined Apertura Clausura from last year. So there was some question marks. It was like, okay, well, did all three MLS teams just qualify for the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which is, of course, the new name and new format for the CONCACAF Champions League that we hold so dear to our hearts. But no, that is not the case. If Monterey qualify via League's Cup, that next spot, the spot that they vacate that already hold, will go to León because León had the best combined Apertura Clausura standings there. So it could be Monterey and León and two MLS teams. It could be three MLS teams, but both the teams that win semifinals will qualify for the Champions Cup, and then the winner of the third place game will qualify as well. I still have not completely wrapped my mind around the changes, both in the name as well as the format, but we'll get there.
I forgot, but interesting as well, Inter Miami have two shots because they're in the Open Cup semifinal.
Yeah.
So there's some trickle down across the board here.
And they might have three shots because they might make the playoffs.
And they might have a fourth shot because they might win the World Cup. I like we're all one-upping each other.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, we're off to a good start here. Okay, let's get into the best thing we saw. Quarterfinals edition. I'll get us started. It gives me absolutely no pleasure to announce.
Wait a minute. Before you do that.
And reinforce
I just want to give credit.
Trampling the bit.
Where credit is due to John Arnold for getting the clarification out of CONCACAF about the CONCACAF, I almost call it CCL, CONCACAF Champions Cup slots for next year. John does incredible work. Go subscribe to Getting CONCACAF, which is his newsletter. It's especially important in the wake of last week's very sad news about the Striker.com website that covered about a half dozen teams in MLS, did really good job. They went under. They said they're going on hiatus for now. We tend to know what that means in this industry. It has been hard for a lot of folks providing independent coverage of the game here in the U.S. and Canada, both on the club level, men's and women's, and national team level. So support one of the people who's doing it best, which is John Arnold. Go out and, you know, subscribe to Soccer America, Top Drawer Soccer. Our guys at The Athletic do great. There are
Backheeled is a new entry.
Backheeled is fantastic. Your local newspaper, if you are lucky enough to have a local beat writer, I'm talking to you, Union fans, Atlanta fans, Columbus. Minnesota, Columbus.
Kansas City's got it.
Kansas City. So, like, subscribe to those papers, whitelist them. Click on the occasional ad, write a letter to the editor, do what you can to support independent soccer journalism in the United States and Canada, because there are a lot of people who do a lot of great work, and it's always heartbreaking to me to see one of these ventures go under.
Yeah, we just got done mourning SB Nation. I believe that Sounders at Heart is about to launch their own.
And maybe you'll get the name right eventually. Sounder at Heart. O'Shawn DMs me all the time. He's nice. Like, will you tell Weavy? It's not Sounders at Heart. It's Sounder at Heart.
I'm trying my best. Here I am. Just, you know what? Here I am just exposing my heart.
I don't know.
Trying to promote their new venture.
You weren't going
to
quote John Arnold, and Doyle's the only one who loves independent media.
That's true. I mean,
so after that eulogy and after the really serious support local journalism, were you ready to reset your?
No, I can't. I was just internalizing all the boomer advice from Doyle. But write a letter to the editor. You know,
when you're in your coffee shop and you pick up the local daily,
when you hear the newspaper hit your driveway at 5 a.m., it just makes your heart skip a beat.
On the show, I think just one person subscribes to a physical newspaper. I get it delivered every morning. Wow. I swear to God. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
What newspaper?
New York Times.
Wow.
At the Asbury Park Press?
That's what I was waiting for.
We don't want to dox you, so we won't say the actual beach town that you live in. But, okay, we'll have to talk to the local journalist there, see what
don't
they think about that.
Don't you work for them?
Yeah.
I did high
school
football.
Do you pay for this, or does it just get dropped at your
house? No, you work for the Athletic.
You, Tom Bogert, are an employee of
high school. Not technically. No, I work for the Athletic. Yeah. No, I thought you were talking about the Asbury Park Press. I was like, why does gospel? I did high school football gamers and box scores when I was in college.
Yeah, dude, because I'm a huge high school football fan.
Kenny Pickett, and my scouting level for football wasn't very good. I watched him play. I was like, oh, this kid's pretty okay, but you know, he's not going to be anything.
But he's like,
he's going to Pitt. That's cool. He's got to be.
We saved the banner for this. For like the third segment.
We had a slow start there. Yeah,
with all the crows attacking Kenny Pickett, soaring high like an eagle.
Well, all right,
let's go Jets.
Yes, I agree with you. The John Arnold credit should have been given, and I have now docked myself demerits, though I give myself credit for being
legacy points deducted.
Subscriber from
he already gave himself the points back.
He gained the points. I've broke even.
Luckily, Weeby always comes in with excess points.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, I said,
like Kansas on the recruiting trail, just the extra bags.
No pleasure to announce.
You keep trampling the bit.
Well, my NIL for this show is, it's unbelievable. Unlimited, basically. It's unlimited. Charlotte, I won't kiss this badge because that would be disrespectful, but try to tell you, matchup was bad. Matchup was indeed poor. So the best thing I saw was being proven correct. And then number two was the 90s era curly cord phone for the video assistant referee in the LAFC Monterey game, because that was something that Doyle remembers very fondly.
What were you right about?
That the matchup was bad and they were going to not have a chance to win.
Oh.
They didn't have a chance to win. Yeah. They didn't. They never looked like they were going to threaten Miami in the way that Dallas obviously did. And I think even Atlanta were able to get behind Busquets and get to work. Charlotte started doing that in the second half. And we're burying the lead by talking about Charlotte first here, but whatever. Charlotte started doing that in the second half when our guy Patrick Agyeman came on.
It's been a week and a half. Now he's our guy?
Wait a minute. No. I was there at the Super Draft. I was there.
Boots on the ground.
Only one man announced his name to the world, to himself, and to his family.
And to be fair, that was Weeby did really... I was there the day before the Super Draft. Weeby's like texting the kid, and then all of a sudden, he's on the phone with Agyeman, getting him to like pronounce his name correctly. And also, like, he gave us background because there was a Ghanaian... English soccer player.
Pronounced differently. He said, oftentimes I'm mistaken.
Named Patrick.
They pronounce it wrong.
When Agyeman came on and Schwederski dropped into that like half nine, half 10 role that he played last year, I thought that Charlotte were a lot more dangerous. I think that is the correct way for them to play take what worked last year and build on it. I know Daniel Rios is gone, but I think Agyeman gives you a lot of the box stuff that Rios did, plus the ability to get in behind, as he showed against Houston with that goal. They have 1,000 number eights now, so you can rotate that group. They don't have a ton of good wingers, but they have some guys who are functional there. They looked better in the second half doing that. But Miami, to their credit, had already put the game away at that point. And this was the first Miami win where it was like 4-0. So there were fireworks and Messi scored a goal and, yada, yada, yada. But it was like, it was professional. This was not spectacular. This was just like, oh, there's low hanging fruit. We're just going to take it. And like, we're going to end this game pretty thoroughly by the hour mark.
Yeah. It wasn't as giddy. I was watching as the kids were sleeping and in the Airstream as we glanced. But it wasn't as giddy. I was ready to like wake up.
As we glamped. That has to be the first time. An extra time as we glamped has been said.
Oh, boy. What's the best thing you saw, Dave?
Drexel Dragons. You know that I normally...
You're a Big Five guy. No, well, is Drexel Big Five?
Villanova.
St. Joe's.
UPenn. St. Joe's.
Temple.
And
LaSalle.
Yeah, because that's the one with the bird. We got
this
there.
This is classic
Tom.
Drexel, though. Like, forgotten. Yeah. Like, are they? Are they not?
St. Joe's is the one with the bird.
Yeah.
No. LaSalle has one. Oh, yeah.
No, LaSalle's the Explorers. Yeah.
Come on. Drexel has the number two co-op program in America behind Northeastern. Go Dogs. obviously, I only analyze soccer through the CAA. And so it's good to see now that I know that the CAA stands above Liga MX.
I like the idea of somebody, you know, on the other side of the world listening to Extra Time for the first time, and David's making like mid-major collegiate conference references.
With open arms, we welcome you, international audience, and those that only care about Lionel Messi.
So Querétaro came into this tournament, and they're talking, you know, they play Philly, then they have to play against Gustavo Bow and Carlos Gil. They didn't know that their demise would be Chris Donovan off the bench in the 101st minute, technically, but 90 plus 11. Obviously runs the line to perfection. I did instant replay. I called it correct. Then it was confirmed later by the
soccer photogrammetry. Is there a better feeling, though, when you do instant replay on an offside decision and you say this is onside or offside, and he comes in and he just validates you with the math?
It's
such a good feeling.
I didn't really come in hard. I was like, this is a bad camera angle. The assistant referee is in line with the play, so I don't disagree with the call. That's what I said.
Oh, okay.
Which was a soft win.
But how does Querétaro's coach feel? Yeah, Mauro Genk right now, he's got to be just...
No, not stoked. And that's what you get when you mess with the Dragon. And Philly's through to the semifinal.
Might need a public apology from Mr. Genk.
To the CAA?
Referees, to CONCACAF, to Drexel.
Maybe.
To straight lines.
Yeah.
Maybe. Many things.
Maybe.
Yeah. But Philly are on. You could have gone Drexel Dragons slay Liga MX.
Once you get you Drexel Dragons in, I don't need it.
Could have.
Yeah, I don't need the rest of it.
At that point. Yeah. Okay, Doyle, what's the best thing you saw?
Hani Mukhtar proving us all right. We've said for a few years now that if this team, this Nashville team, gets like a true number nine, a guy who lives in the box, which is no slight on Teal Bunbury, but Teal's always been kind of like half a winger. He spent a lot of years in New England playing on the wing primarily.
Is it a slight to them?
It's not a slight.
Well, there's been a lot of people who have played forward for Nashville over the last
I thought CJ did a good job with all the holdup stuff. But
feels
CJ's,
like Yonder Cadiz is getting
Yonder Cadiz is getting murked here. Yeah.
Ethan Zubak feels like he's not coming out on top.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Can't catch a break.
No.
For a long time, we all thought that Hani would hit an even higher level if he could play with a real box predator. And the early returns, they're early with Sam Surridge. But I think he and Hani have shared the field for about 65 minutes. And Hani's got a goal and three assists in those 65 minutes together, including the...
it's four assists.
Yep.
Four assists in the two games. But Surridge wasn't on the field for the first half against Minnesota.
I didn't quite catch that.
But I think Siri might be right here, because didn't Hani assist Surridge's header late on and then had three assists in this match against Minnesota United?
What he's saying is that Surridge wasn't on the
field for all the assists in the
Minnesota game. Yeah.
Sorry, Siri.
Siri was about to explain that to you.
Yeah, my bad.
It just looks right. It's the type of center forward that makes the game easier for playmakers, for second forwards, and obviously that's where Hani has spent his entire MLS career. It has worked as a partnership even more quickly than I expected, though not faster than Siri expected.
Yeah, that was
on an average day. How often is your flashlight on in your pocket?
Never. And that is the first time that has happened. That is the first time that has happened.
I confess up to being a frequent...
It happens with my watch. Yeah. I'm surprised it doesn't happen with my watch more often as I'm sitting here talking like this. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That was the best moment.
That was really good. That was a good bit.
Woo, Tom.
Thank you,
best
Apple.
Thing you saw.
Best thing I saw, it was a bit painful as someone...
Just check this mic.
Yeah, my phone's good. Yeah, don't worry. I'm just
checking on you.
Tom actually just has agents on a call the whole time. So they're listening in.
From 35 different sources.
Yeah. It was kind of a painful one, but LAFC going up 2-0 over Monterrey and then losing at the end. And the way that third goal went in, that was just CCL fever kind of all over again. The pre-Sounders era before an MLS team won. It just... All the pain, all the, trauma, PTSD of, like, oh, man, like, they're really going to do it. They're really going to beat Monterrey.
Nope. But you were ready. You know, like a fighter who does the whole thing where they get punched in the stomach over and over to train themselves. That's us with Liga MX competition, especially in the big clubs. We're just ready for it.
Monterrey is at a different level. You know, in this tournament, David and I just did the season pass preview for the Nashville-Monterrey game. And in this tournament so far, MLS teams are 17-12-12 with a +9 goal differential against all Liga MX teams except Monterrey. Monterrey, MLS teams are no wins, 4 losses, no draws, -7 goal differential. And they played this game with the equivalent of 3 DPs on the bench.
And they're adding Tecatito now. Like, that's this team.
After Sergio Canales, they just added.
Yeah. It's insane. It's an embarrassment of wealth.
Like, and they have a 150 goals and 300 games goal scorer in Funes Mori. Yeah. Their fans are like, we don't even like this dude. Like, get rid of him.
Yeah. Do you remember? You were about 15. Do you remember the RSL loss to Monterrey in the 2011 CCL final?
Not live or anything.
Okay, because that was the first real gut punch of the CCL era, right? Like, MLS teams had been, you know.
Well, I have my imaginary one when Brian Ching.
Houston against Pachuca
in the rain. Yeah. Brian Ching had an open header and he hit his shoulder. But yes, you're right. Because the initial gut punch.
That was the Humberto Suazo era Monterrey team. They won 3 straight CCLs.
He was Gignac before Gignac.
Yeah. And RSL went to Monterrey and they got a 1-1 draw. Was it a scoreless draw or 1-1 draw in the first leg?
I think it was scoreless.
I think it was a scoreless.
Once Monterrey scored, RSL had to score twice at home. That was the issue, was they didn't have any away goals.
And then they drew 1-1 in the second leg, I want to say. And Fabian Espindola missed 37 chances.
And Kyle Beckerman was suspended on yellow cards.
That's right. Yep.
It was 2-2 in the first leg, and then a 1-0 loss to Monterrey at home.
Okay, so the 1-0 at home would have won it. Or 1-1 at home would have won it for RSL. And they hit the post, I think, 4 times. That was the first, like, oh man, this is going to be so, like, this was so brutal. But hey, we'll be back real soon. And then, like, the gap between the Monterrey clubs and Club America and MLS started growing. And it's finally started to narrow a bit. I think between, like, I think MLS in the middle class and at the bottom, it has surpassed Liga MX. But that top 3 group of Monterrey, Tigres, and Club America, they're still at a level above. And this showed it. This showed it.
And if anyone's interested and doesn't already know, the other thing that happened that same year is that Tigres went to the Copa Libertadores final. And that's why they signed Gignac and a lot of the players they signed, because their ownership was like, I believe it was already
that
set.
That was 15.
When they 2015.
That it was league. 15 when they went to the, and then they immediately signed Gignac, yeah.
And it was set that Liga MX teams were no longer going to be in Copa Lib. So it was like, we have one shot to win this. Yeah. And they spent a ton of money. And then Club America and Monterrey reacted by also spending a ton of money.
Yeah.
And that's when you said that gap opened up, which is starting to shift. It would be cool if teams played in Copa Libertadores again.
Yeah, right. Producer Maria wants to make sure that we say Los Gigantes.
Yeah.
Which is the Mexican fan base's term for the 3 clubs, the 2 in Monterrey and Club America. That's opposed to Los Grandes, which are the 4 traditional clubs, which is Club America, Chivas, Pumas, and Cruz Azul. And those last 3 just do not compete at the same level as the Gigantes. To put it in further context, in the last 5 years, the Gigantes, those 3 clubs, have spent $10 million or more, and this is before the Tecatito thing, $10 million or more on 13 different players. MLS, 28 seasons total, 29 clubs have spent that much on 7 players total. And 4 of those are Atlanta. They're still in a different ballpark. They're still at the point where they could go to Seattle and go down 2-0 in 10 minutes and come back and smash them 4-2. They're still in the ballpark where they can, you know, go to LAFC, who were the double winners last year and who have added a ton of talent from around the world, and go down 2-0 and come back and win 3-2 on the road after being on the road for three straight weeks. This is the tallest hill to climb in North American club soccer.
Three teams have a chance to climb it. I was going to save this, but I think we should just do it now because we're going to get back in MLS, which starts on Sunday. It won't be a Saturday night. That's when the League's Cup final will be after these Tuesday night semifinals, as well as the third place game. Big picture on this tournament. We've heard a lot from coaches, players, Liga MX executives, et cetera. A bunch of people saying, okay, well, this isn't fair, or change this. And I'm just going to take us into a vacuum right now. We don't control any levers, but we can talk about the game and what we like and what we'd like to see more of. And just as theory, is there anything you'd like to see change? And one of the things I think would be cool is to seed Mexican teams in a way that, you know, rewards some of that dominance and acknowledges that there are huge fan bases across the country that will, for instance, pack a stadium from Monterrey. And if Monterrey is the best team in the region, and let's
say you're saying Monterrey
champion,
finishes as Clausura champions, they get to choose a neutral site where they are the host,
yeah, that'd be
until
dope.
They lose.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the U.S.
in
or
some
Canada.
Way of seeding between the two.
Interesting.
Maybe it's, and look, maybe it's like, hey, just for the group stage.
I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
It. You're in Houston. Or maybe yeah, it's, you yeah. know, if you're,
you can like,
if you're America, we're going to L.A. Or, hey, Tijuana, you did really well and you got seeded and via League's Cup results as well, because I think you got to bake that in. Okay, now you're saying we're in San Diego. Because, right. Look, it seems pretty clear that Liga MX, at least the top of the structure as far as executives and all that, they want to be in the United States and Canada for these matches.
Yeah.
It's part of the draw for them. Is it's not just a competitive thing. Like, they would like to be here for business reasons as well. You have to acknowledge that that is a reality. I think it'd just be cool to give them a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more reward for how they've performed and like the stature and everything else.
I don't disagree with that. That would be cool as hell. And you could, you know, figure out which MLS teams aren't going to be hosting anything because they finished bottom of the table. So, like, okay, Toluca claims Denver as their home for the term. I think that's a really good
idea. Also, there's a competitive aspect for MLS teams, too. You want to host games? It's the same as the playoffs, man. Like, win games. Perform. Yep. Be at a competitive level that's greater than those that you're competing with. I think that is healthy for the tournament overall. Would it be cool to play some games in Mexico? Absolutely. I think that would be really cool, but that's just me as a person who likes this region, likes Mexico, likes the soccer culture there, would love to go to a game, see that game played, would love to see MLS teams tested in that way. But I'm just trying to find a way under the current structure that would be a little bit different. And also so we don't hear as much complaining.
As someone who likes who loves culture or, you know, soccer in this region, the culture of it, we are 90 minutes away potentially from Lionel Messi playing in like Tegucigalpa. That is the dream.
Yeah.
Anything else from this tournament? Big picture. Because Doyle kind of laid it out there with like Monterrey's dominance. Then you have Tigres, America.
No, I think you have to get teams on a field to see where they stand. And I think it will get better the more these teams are together. When you go back to what RSL did in 2013 and then you go forward to what Seattle did last year and like think about, okay, RSL needed to have a balanced roster at the time. Seattle did too. But Seattle had like borderline five DPs in that team, right? Yeah. And they had their Roldans and they had more, like, you had to grow because you could see the difference. And I think in a tournament like this, RSL, they've spent a bunch of money. They've spent it well. They are a really good team. They got sliced by Monterrey. Yeah. They lost again to LAFC. They now, I think, knowing where the gap is can help you put your finger on what's the next steps and how do we get forward and how do we get better. And so I think being on the field and being in these moments is big. And I also think we're going to start to see a closer connection of, like, there was a phase where Lucho Acosta was going one way and Edson Flores was coming the other way and Lucas Elrion. And I think that's good because I think there are a lot of players in both leagues who would be more successful in the other league. And so I think League's Cup is a chance to see those players on the field against your players and be like, huh, yeah, maybe we don't need to go to the French second division to find a right back. And I think Liga MX team saying, like, maybe we don't need to go to Brazil or Argentina to find our next center forward.
It's also that, and it's the relationships as well. Tim Bezbachenko talked about this during his time at Toronto. They played against Tigres in the Champions League. Yeah, in the the CCL fever. I got the CCC in my head now.
Yeah. We're going to have to figure that out.
I still think we got a
triple C. Like, I don't
CCL
know.
CCL fever still has to be grandfathered in.
Campeones are campeones.
So Tim Bezpachenko talked about this, that he started relationships with executives at Tigres, was one of the places that he spoke about, because then when he was in Columbus, the deal to sign Lucas El Arayán, he was like, it was really easy because we knew each other well. And these relationships were built from my time in Toronto, going to the Champions League and playing against these teams. So in addition to, oh, wow, like that right back that we might not have scouted, he's really good. Maybe we should try to sign him. But also you can call the sporting director for Tigres. You can call the sporting director for Club America if you start to have those relationships. And that makes deals easier.
It just sounds like an argument for expanding the League's Cup to include the top half dozen teams from Brazil and Argentina.
I saw some Colombia. Of those headlines
and
well.
Probably any team in La Paz.
Yeah, right.
You got to go to altitude as well.
Should we have Houston Dynamo 2 in there? I mean, you saw what they did to the Rapids first years.
Shout out to Colorado Rapids, too, for clinching a playoff spot for the first time ever in MLS.
One more point I want to make from a Liga MX perspective. This was actually kind of a fascinating tournament. Not only because it's always fun to watch the two Monterrey clubs do what they do, not only because you get a feel for how misdirected some of Club America's decision-making is with regard to roster building, because how do you not have a backup number nine when you have all the... But also because Pachuca were the number one Liga MX team. They were the team with the bye. Pachuca's actually the most successful Liga MX team of the past quarter century. 7 Liga MX titles, 5 CONCACAF Champions League titles. They won Copa Sudamericana. They're the only CONCACAF team ever to win a South American tournament. They do it differently from the Gigantes. They do it by developing players from within their academies. And we saw Santos Laguna, who's also a super successful club of the past 25 years, and Pumas, who are one of Los Grandes. They also went all in on their academy system as well. And we're starting to see more of that from Liga MX clubs, because they just can't compete year after year financially with the Gigantes. So they're saying, okay, we have to do what Pachuca does. And it means you're going to have some moments where you sell, right? You're like Chucky Lozano and half a dozen other players that they've sold over the past few years, where you sell and you're going to bottom out and you're going to lose in the first round to the Houston Dynamo. There are going to be lower lows, but we've also seen really high highs from Pachuca. And the knock-on effect, you know, we've all, I certainly have had some fun at the expense of El Tri over the past 4 or 5 years as the talent pool has kind of taken a nosedive and there aren't guys really in that age 17 to 22-year-old group who look like they're going to step up. Like, they might be looking at a lost generation. But below that, with the investment now coming from Liga MX's teams in rebuilding their academies, and David's probably better to speak on this than I am because he does GA Cup every year and he has more familiarity, El Tri is going to come roaring back by the end of this decade. Like, they are going to have so much talent because of these teams.
There you go.
Sounds like Doyle's planting a seed there.
I mean, I'm admiring. I really admire the way teams like Pachuca do their business. I think Pachuca, their blueprint, like, yeah, you're going to have occasional seasons where you go into the toilet a little bit because you have to sell. But they have such belief in their ability to develop great players, guys who you can sell for 15 or 20 million, or more important, I don't want to say more important, as important, guys who will be lifers and who will keep improving the club and set the floor at a level where you're never going to completely lose relevance. It's like they have clarity, they have vision, and from a Mexican perspective, it is great to see so many clubs in Liga MX now following that blueprint.
Play your kids. Hallelujah.
How do you say play your kids in Spanish?
Praise be.
Maria, get in my ear. How do you say...
Jugar sus niños? I don't know. She's going to have to practice. Like, yeah, That's probably... She's telling you.
Jugar a los niños.
Okay, so yeah, there you go. The conjugation escaped me there, but the general words were there. All right, let's talk about the actual games. We've got a funny email on that coming up. Inter Miami 4, Charlotte 0. 5 games, 5... Not wins. I guess it's 4 wins in regulation, 1 in penalties. We'll give Dallas the credit on that one for Messi in Miami. 8 goals for Messi. It looks like he might not get a goal in this match. Then lo and behold, he stood in the middle of 5 Charlotte defenders, was not marked, and Leo Campana looked down, looked again. He's still open. Okay, I'm going to pass it to his foot. Messi scores it. Rank the tests in Miami have had so far in this tournament, Dave.
Not including Philly?
Well, you can. You can say where you think Philly
on
ranks
paper,
at the end.
Philly will be the hardest.
Yeah. Right. But we have Charlotte. That's a 4-0 win. We have Dallas. That's a 4-4. Orlando City. That's a 3-1. Those are all in the knockout round. And then Atlanta United 4-0 and Cruz Azul 2-1. Yeah.
Dallas by far the hardest. It was the only away game. And Dallas was and is the only team on that list that it keeps their lines tight and plays coherently from front to back. And they still gave up 4 goals.
I think it's a little harsh. That's a little harsh on Orlando.
Yeah, okay, I think it's Orlando for me.
Orlando at home and Dallas on the road. Dallas is a tougher team. And I think Dallas, is going to move forward the way we saw them play in that game and be more dangerous. I think Camungo's helped with a bunch of that. I think Jesus at right back is helping as well. And now another defensive midfielder. Maybe you can change your shape. I think Dallas is the toughest one. I would put Orlando right behind that. I would put Atlanta behind that. I would put Charlotte there, and then Cruz Azul. That was the first game. Messi didn't start. Busquets didn't start. Blah blah blah. Cruz Azul is terrible, so I don't know. But that's a toss up with Atlanta.
I thought Atlanta. It was an easier game for. I don't know how to put it. Like Charlotte and Atlanta were both like dominant wins for Miami in different ways. The Atlanta game, it felt like once Miami started trying, Atlanta had no chance. And the Charlotte game, it felt like Miami knew within 5 or 12 minutes, I guess, is when they scored their first goal. We don't really have to get out of third gear for this one. So those two, I think Cruz Azul was at that level roughly when Messi came on. Dallas and Orlando City a tier above. But yeah, like the Union should be the best. Yes.
This is, I guess, along with LAC, but this is the best team in MLS over the last 5 years, year to year in Philly. They are coherent. They know who they are. They know their style. They have talent at each position. They don't beat themselves. And like you talked about with Charlotte, I think opposite, this is a bad matchup for Inter Miami because they're direct. They're physical. And so if Miami pushes their fullbacks up, Kai Wagner's arguably the best creator in the league, let alone left wing back. And Baizo's been good. Nathan Harriel's been dangerous. And if Julian Carranza is healthy, we're talking about Kamal Miller struggling with Bernard Camungo in transition. Now you have Carranza and Ura. Like everything about this is on a different level than what they've experienced. And while Philly hasn't been excellent in the 3 knockout games they've played,
they've been poor by their standards.
But those have been all 3 teams who wanted to kill the game and didn't care what it looked like.
Yeah.
So if Tata Martino is going to change everything about what this team's done so far, then fair on Miami. If Miami's going to sit 11 behind the ball and say, we don't care what this game looks like, we're here for the result.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that.
So I don't see a world in which Philly doesn't look more like the group stage team that scored 8 goals in 2 games than the knockout team that has been forced into penalty kicks twice and won 2-1 in stoppage time.
Would you still feel that way if I said Julian Carranza is not starting? Grade 1 hamstring strain, says Jim Curtin. It is, quote, the best news they could have gotten on the injury itself, and Carranza wants to play a role in some capacity. You read through the smokescreen there. That's not even really a smokescreen. In some capacity means that he's not going to start, I would think, Tom.
That's the assumption, yeah.
Yeah.
But Daniel Gazdag is back and no restrictions. He should be starting, which is huge because the way to get at Miami is probably with width and with runners going in behind. So while like Gazdag plays through the center, he gets in those channels. He's very direct and like he's going to cause Miami a lot of problems. So while maybe on paper it doesn't look like that's an important matchup or that's a way that they can really get at Miami, like he's going to be drifting all over the place and it's going to be difficult. So it would be a lot better if Julian Carranza was able to start and what the strike partnership would do with the center backs, and they can still do that with it, whether it's Chris Donovan or somebody else playing up top. But again, like,
Or Gozdag.
But then
it's Gozdag and Ua probably.
But yeah,
I think so.
I guess Gozdag being at like the 10 is where he could kind of get in the channels and be more direct and have another finisher out there, because if not, then it's going to be a midfielder playing in that role.
I'm reading this other Jim Curtin quote that Matthew DeGeorge just tweeted out, which says, Jim Curtin quote, "I never in my life would think that literally the hottest ticket of the summer outside of Taylor Swift would be in Chester with the Philadelphia Union playing Leo Messi." Reminder that Jim's first game 9 years ago was in front of about 5,000 fans.
Better get those power issues sorted.
Yeah. They're treating out the bag policy, like all the stuff for like, oh, you've never been here before. These are the things you need to know.
I like this one.
And that place bounces under the lights. So it is going to be wild.
Do we, we're hoping that the Union fans didn't sell the old tickets, huh?
Yeah, whatever it is. I think it'll be fun.
And if you
did. I mean, the Dallas atmosphere was pro Dallas.
Oh, it was.
And electric. I think it's maybe other people from the city who want to see Messi who maybe don't go to every game. I think there's still city pride, and I think if you're good and you win, people like winners and people like being connected to that. And the Union have put together some runs over the last few years where people in that city know that they're a good team.
Did we learn anything from Querétaro, Doyle, that applies to this game? It was another 3-5-2 for the Union. Is there anything that you take away? You say, okay, well, this ports over, or this is a similar theme, or is it just so different?
I think it's so different. Like, the one thing I keep thinking about, which is bigger picture and like a discussion for a different day, Jack McGlynn is probably more of a 10 at this point than he is a number 8. I think I'd like him in that role a little bit better. I know the Union are developing him as a number 8, and you know, maybe even like a Pirlo type of 6 with, or a Busquets type with two running 8s in front of him, and he sits at the back point of a triangle. I kind of just like McGlynn in attack, but that's not something, like, if Gazdag's back, that's not something that we're going to see in this game.
The opening goal in this game was Philly playing how Philly plays and McGlynn changing the pace of play. When he decided it had to happen.
Did you see that touch on that pass? Like, he plays a one time. He's you know, 40 yards from goal. Not even. Yeah, maybe 40 yards from goal. Coming towards the sideline to receive in a pocket of space. And it's a square ball to him. And rather than take a touch and look at
it, fires it.
With the outside of his left boot, he side foots a no look pass into the pocket, then turns and takes space to return this, to receive the return pass in zone 14, like facing a retreating, scrambling defense. Dribbles hard at the defense to put them on, like, the entire back line on their heels. Looks at the goal like he's going to shoot, and then plays another no look pass across his hips to Bueno at the penalty spot. What that was.
And everything about that whole sequence was like, Philly had been knocking it around, and it was like he decided it was time to go, and everyone understood the way he played the pass.
I want that in the final third. I want him in a position where he can take those chances in possession, because if he's deeper, he has to be more methodical, more measured, and like that's his game too. We've seen him play really well as a number 8, but I think Philly's been missing a little bit of that. Like, Gazdag has, you know, super productive player, very good on the ball, does not have that type of vision as a number 10. So I want McGlynn pushed up and put in a situation where it's like, if you think there's a 20% chance that you could pull this off, do it.
Isn't there a possibility we see that in this game? With Carranza hurt, then Gazdag is a natural second forward next to Ua, who will stretch the line and provide space in behind for them to float, and that's where McGlynn can be effective as well. Bedoya's coming back. I cannot see. I don't know. It would be strange to me to force Bedoya into this game coming back, but it's Ali Bedoya and it's the Union. And
they probably learned their question or their lesson, like, with that from MLS Cup, right?
You would think, but you wouldn't know. I don't know. There's some other matchup interest here. Go ahead.
We're burying the lead. Jose Martinez versus Lionel Messi. Let's go.
El Brujo.
I'm juiced. I can't wait.
What? How do you? If you are, you know, we have all these, all the lore of your men's league tales. Let's say that we put you into Jose Martinez's body for this matchup. Where are you going with that one?
I'd be very excited to be Jose Martinez. Yeah. That sounds like seems like a lot of fun. Yeah. He seems like
Freaky Friday style. You just wake up and you're like, I'm so fit. I'm gonna run to the stadium.
I mean, I'm sure that he'll be very physical. We'll see early on how the referees are calling the game, whether it's going to be one of those days where maybe he can get away with seven fouls before he picks up a yellow card, or if they're going to go quick, because if it's the latter, that's going to be a struggle because they need him to kind of play on that edge to disrupt Lino Messi, to disrupt everybody else. They're going to have, whether it's Gazdag or one of them,
Flock.
And one of the central midfielders that has to be on Busquets to try to disrupt possession from deep. And then Martinez and everybody else essentially has to be kind of getting in messy space and doing whatever they can to make it difficult.
One of the fun elements is Joseph and Jose Martinez are, of course, Venezuela teammates. And Joseph is now like the fourth Beatle of the Barca guys. He just sits there and reminisces about Champions League.
You call him Ringo?
Yeah, pretty much. You see it immediately where Joseph's always like, us? Yeah, yeah. Hey, Sergio, Messi, they want us.
Self-preservation. He's trying to get that contract option picked up next year. Probably. Smart man.
Just lowering chairs and stuff. So it'll be funny.
Did you talk to Lionel about the fact that you're not picking that up?
So it'll be funny to see, like you said, like now, how does Joseph manage the refs with Jose? And, like, what's he telling Messi and all that? I mean, Jose Martinez and Damian Lowe tried to start a fight in, like, the first half of this game. And it was this close. Everyone that went for a headbutt just slipped and missed. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw something go down in this next game.
Didn't we see Argentina play Jamaica recently? Am I crazy to say that?
No, they played right before the World Cup. Yeah. They played a friendly.
Red Bull Arena. Right,
just or checking in Florida. Damian Lowe's got some experience here. He, you know, Messi didn't start, but he's ready.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. Who has more at stake in this game, Union or Miami, Doyle?
I think the Union do. I really do.
Give us that. Like, do it.
Since 2012.
Yes.
You are just stat bombing.
Well,
us.
We just
did the preview. Since 2012, they have been in five semifinals and four finals. And
across all comps,
across all comps. And they have no cups. So that is so very, very metro from the Union, who do have a trophy, right? They won the Supporters' Shield.
Listen to the way he said that. Listen, that was almost dismissive of said.
No,
they do have a trophy.
That's
a trophy.
The Supporters' Shield is still my favorite trophy.
Can't drink out of it.
I mean, you could.
You could. Yeah, you could.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's more of a charcuterie board.
And Jim Curtin said that before this tournament, like, yeah, we're going for it. We have a really good chance at getting this done. And they do. But if you look on talent, like overall talent, I think the Union have the fewest match winners of any of the teams left in this tournament, and that includes Nashville.
Okay,
I don't know about that.
Let's just rank that. Let's dive in there, honey.
Honey Walker Zimmerman.
Does honey count as two?
Basically, over the past couple of years, he has.
Yeah, well, if Carranza doesn't start, that's tough.
Well, hang on, Walker.
Yeah,
and who else?
I mean, I think Dax is there still with his passing.
If Dax is there, then Jose Martinez is there.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
Andre Blake's there.
Yeah.
Elliot Panico matches Andre Blake. Obviously.
And we're saying Carranza is out in this scenario?
Yeah.
I don't think
Ura is there.
No, but I think
I would put my money on Surridge. Well,
wouldn't you say
put
like between Glesnes
but
and
I put
Elliot.
I put my money on Gazdag ahead of Surridge. I don't know anything about Surridge.
Yeah, but the gap between Hani and... Well, either way, we're talking about the Union compared to Nashville as opposed to the Union compared to Inter Miami or Monterey.
Philly's going to win this game 4-1 on a trot.
I hope you're right. I mean, it would be...
Would that please you, Dave?
They're going to win this 4-1 on a trot, and then they're going to lose 2-1 to Monterey after they hit the woodwork four times.
If they don't win this, I think we
I can't imagine what the mental state is in an MLS Cup situation, yeah. Like, or an MLS Cup playoff run for this team now. It would be the fourth trophy in a year they'd be going for, in which they had lost, let's say they lose this game, two semifinals and a final. And, like, two of them to LAFC, so I can't even picture what an MLS Cup against LAFC for them, like, mentally would be. But you are, you made a that's so Metro joke, but, like, you are entering that territory of this is a problem. And Jim Curtin's been the coach for all of it, which I don't think is a knock on Jim Curtin, but it creates that institutional knowledge as well as pain. And a lot of these players will have been in four or five of those where they have not been able to perform in those big moments.
And they've gone into, I can't remember the exact rosters from every team, but they've gone into probably every one of those semifinals with less talent than the team they've gone up against. It's just a fact. It's the way the team is built, and like they've done a great job. It speaks to, I think, Curtin's ability as a manager, developer of talent, to get this team to be so consistently good. And it speaks to Ernst Tanner's eye for, you know, bargains like Jakob Glesnes and Jose Martinez and, you know, Olivier Mbaizo, Kai Wagner. Like, they've done amazing work. But we see it year after year, in not just in MLS, but like all over the world, tournament style soccer, it tends to be the team with the best goal scorers are the ones who, and you have to pay for money, you have to pay for goals.
Is there a window of some sort, I'm not saying a forever window, but a current window closing right now because Kai Wagner, because Carranza interest, because Mbaizo says he wants to leave, because Alejandro Bedoya is, you know, at the end of his career, we don't know.
Yes and no, because Jose Martinez, I don't think is going anywhere.
Well, his new contract, I think that's big.
Yeah.
Yes. Elliot, we didn't know he was
going
to stay.
Elliot Glesnes and Blake aren't going anywhere.
Sure, but I get Glesnes that, but might. You were just talking really? About goal scoring.
I mean, this is the kind of player that, he's definitely on radars in Europe, but like, would you be surprised if somebody came in with a few $1 million bid? And no. Philly always sell when the price is right. And that's part of the model, is that right. you'll come here, play well.
But I guess that's what I'm saying. You can throw Jose Martinez at me all day. Hey, great center backs, Andre Blake.
Well, no, because we're talking about a spine.
I agree. But if you move Carranza, if you move, it's your captain retires. Like, those aren't guys that you can probably go. Like, another Carranza deal is not going to come around and land in your lap.
Ty Barabo, Bruchim Habayim. Come on.
Yeah, okay.
But Carranza was nothing.
Agreed. But it landed in their lap. The cost of it made it. It wasn't cost. It was a chance that they could take with their eyes shut because it wasn't going to cost them.
But part of the reason
there are so many bad DP, or not bad, but like misused DP signings in MLS. Like, Ernst Tanner is probably like licking his lips at the idea of fleecing another team for
the reason. The reason that a Carranza hits is one, they have a clear model so that they can identify specific talent, but also because when he comes into a team, his responsibility is low because the quality and the baseline is high. And the point in saying that Blake, Elliott, Martinez,
Gazdag,
probably a few pieces of the central midfield. We don't know exactly which.
Like Bueno, he's probably not going to go anywhere immediately.
Those all being there is life will be easier for that person coming in versus Yonder Cadiz was supposed to do a lot when he came in.
And then 2 years from now.
I don't know if Yonder Cadiz is the right.
And then 2 years from now.
Is the right comparison here.
Kevin Sullivan leads them to the domestic treble.
We're hit the U15 level here. We got to.
By the way, have you been so quiet because you've been following the Tyler Adams to Liverpool transfer saga that's playing out right now?
Yeah, the latest is Bournemouth.
Well.
Oh, is that why you have a smile?
It was Liverpool for an hour, and then it changed to Bournemouth in the last 15 minutes, but apparently the Bournemouth deal is not done, and there's some speculation that Tyler wants Liverpool. For those who don't know, Tom is a...
He doesn't walk alone.
What's funny about Bournemouth wanted to buy Tyler Adams from the Red Bulls, and the only way that they would have been able to get him a work permit at that time, they would have had to give him like a pretty big cut. He would have had to be like the highest paid player on the team when he was like 18 or 19. But like, they're long-term admirers of Tyler Adams, so that'd be...
They've been swiping cool. right for a long time. Yeah. All right, we'll see.
Showing his age.
What's it now?
I have no idea.
Is super legs? Like, what are
I
you
just
going,
wouldn't go
David's
into?
David's a married man. He has yeah, no idea.
Yeah, what are you trying to get him? Get him caught right now? Just, you relax. Know,
he has more single friends than I do.
I'm not E&M, ethically non-monogamous. That's not me.
Okay. What's it say? What? For...
I just learned that term.
What?
Yeah.
That's got to be for a different podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. If we touch that... It is going to be bad for
me.
All
just looked at each other and was like, is this a known thing that I should know? And you were like giving me the same eyes. Like, is that a real term that people use?
As Jim Curtin would say, welcome to New York. It's been waiting for you.
What's at stake for Messi just in Miami? Like, how,
I mean, it's the greatest tournament in the world. Yeah, like yeah. The one trophy he needs for
people
get, to
you
be
can only
convinced.
Win, you only can win the first League's Cup once.
Yeah.
True.
So
first League's Cup.
Yeah. Well, the first, you know.
The first full league. Real.
Tom's a league scripture right there.
Yeah.
All right, LAFC, Monterrey, we sort of touched on that one. LAFC up quickly, penalty in the first minute. Bogush with another one, leading 2-0, and wah-wah, Rose Bowl was popping.
David has the point that I want to make on this.
Okay, one. David, make the point.
Doyle's just directing the show reader. From behind the set. The point is, LAFC goes up 2-0, they score in the opening minute. And Monterrey proceeds, I believe, to have 73% possession throughout the first half. Part of that's game states. A lot of that is, as Doyle has liked to talk about, Monterrey's change in style with Sergio Canales coming in and with their ability to control the game. The problem for LAFC is when you look at who they were under Bob Bradley, a ball-dominant and high-pressing team, to what they've shifted to under Cherundolo, where they are a deep-lying transition team. They don't. None of the facets of their game model do they dictate the way the game happens. And so when the game's against them, what we saw in this one was they had no ability to change the pace or the energy or take the air out or just move where the ball is coming from consistently. They don't choose where they were trapping and forcing Monterrey into spots off the ball, and they couldn't put their foot on the ball and control it. And so they went went up 2-0. It gets pulled back to 2-1 after the wild VAR, phone call, you know, landline situation.
Sick.
Caller ID. Hey, you guys, VAR is calling. Someone pick up the phone.
Yeah. Hey, is the video? Where's the video? Is this the referee?
Ma, I'm on the phone with my friends.
Dial tone.
So after that, and it was the correct call, it goes 2-1. And every time LAFC touched the ball from that moment on, it was a quick transition attack and a quick shot. And they never shifted what Monterrey was doing, and that's what they've become. They are super dangerous. That game, they were going to win by scoring the third goal, not by defending the two-goal lead, and they were never able to put away the third goal. I think it bodes fairly well for Nashville because Nashville does a lot of the same things in the attack where there was gaps for against Monterrey, but they do have an idea of how their lines sit, where they want to direct the ball, where they want attacks to come from, against them at least. I don't know how LAFC shifts this. There's no one in central midfield that controls the game. Maybe if Vela's out there, the talent's so overwhelming that it just doesn't matter. But that's what we've seen, I think, over the course of this year. And I think we definitely saw it in CCL, and now we're seeing it again in Leagues Cup.
Any loose strands there for you, Doyle?
Nope, that's it.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Me and Doyle were on... We were AIM messaging and talking on the phone about this the other day. So yeah. We're on the
Player Kids 1973. Yeah. I don't know.
LAFC still still might win MLS Cup, but even against the Union last year in MLS Cup, like they were hanging on for dear life the final 60 minutes of that game, and it's just different from what we saw under Bob Bradley. Now LAFC fans will tell you it's better.
Yeah,
because they did win MLS Cup, which they didn't pull off under Bob.
And the talent they've gone out fits it. Buanga is incredible in transition. It's
intoxicating in the open field.
Even in this game,
he's really good in possession, though. Like the moments where they do still knock the... Like, he is really smart. His box arrival is great. One-time finishes. They could do it. They could be that team again. And I'm not saying... to the exclusion of all else. But it's like they've completely removed that club from the bag, which is disappointing.
It's also interesting, too, because I think Monterrey had this reputation.
Correct.
in Mexico. Yeah. Like, very same reputation. And the reputation was they will murder you on the break. They don't have the other, you know, gear to go into. They can't play. They want to play this way. They want to play with the ball, which maybe LAFC is not in that boat. But they just can't quite find a way to do it. You know, this tournament has been really their big transition out of that. And you can say, well, is that competition? Is that how other teams set up against them in Leagues Cup? You know, yada, yada, yada. Is Canales changing some of that? Probably. But he's a new arrival. But it's interesting to see that dichotomy, like, starkly on the field of Monterrey saying, okay, cool, we'll be the ones that have the ball. We'll create out of it. They're not yet, I think, at the level that they would want to be in that style of play. But
no, I actually, I actually think as big a Giants as we built Monterrey up, I actually think this is good. I think this is a good matchup for Nashville. Because even in what you just said, Monterrey scored 3 goals against LAFC. Only one was from the run of play, and it was John McCarthy knocking a ball down in the box and then not getting up to save rebound.
The not getting up part, like, yeah, but and it's not more like his arms it's up. This ball, like, push it out of bounds. Like, he knocked it back into a shooting position.
Then penalty kick against Tigres, in which that game was going to extra time if that penalty kick doesn't get called. And I don't remember the goal against Portland.
Extra time doesn't exist in this wonderful World Cup.
Sorry, it was going to a shootout. I don't remember the goal against Portland. But the point being, as much possession as Monterrey's had, it has not been super dangerous. They have not created super dangerous
chances. The winner
was
a corner kick, I believe, that was unmarked at the back post by Juan David Mosquera.
In
Portland?
Right. And the second goal was a corner kick flicked on in this game against LAFC. So I don't think Nashville will give up those chances. They were broken down by Club America a couple of times, but that is a team that I think is more dangerous with their possession. So I like this matchup. I think you are going to see Hani float out left, like where Bulanga was, and that's where he's created the surge goal against
just fall in Club the America. Of our guy Jacob Schaffelberg.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a human plow, just creating he's folds the, for Hani to plant in behind him.
The dog sled.
Yeah, yeah.
Going at Nova Scotian dog sled going out in front of you. Yeah.
Speaking of Nashville, Minnesota United.
Tough.
Laid down a little bit, huh?
Tough.
Yeah, that's not great.
Early red card will do that. So I don't think that...
Will it, though? Did it have to?
Didn't have to be that bad, yeah. But I will say the game, everything changed. And I will say, again, like, that's what you have to do against a team when you're a man up for so long. But the rub on Nashville for a while, and I think that this was kind of an older take, and it hasn't been their recent history. I think that they are better attacking than I think people give them credit for, or they remember the expansion season and Walker Zimmerman and everything else that they did. They still needed to go break down a team, a man down, who were going to bunker in, and they scored 5 goals. So it's really positive for Nashville. Again, it's not like they went out and did that 11-11, but that's a great sign that they were able to do that when that's something that they have been struggling with.
Would any of you start Surge in this game?
If he's fit, oh my God, yeah. Yeah. But if he only has 60 minutes in him, then you bring him on at halftime.
Let's get a little tactical dive here, because Erica Smith hit us up and said, I have to say Leagues Cup has been amazing. Nobody is actually analyzing the games. There are a lot of, are you watching the Leagues Cup off the MLS channels? But given the incredible America Nashville game in Toluca, Minnesota, I thought for sure that Extra Time would at least be analyzing the games. Instead, you were talking about raccoons and a whole bunch of other nonsense for the first half hour of the show. When you did talk Nashville, it's pretty much just about Sam Surge's header.
Didn't we talk about the runners and the options
we did.
Dax's pass?
No. We were talking about raccoons.
Nice. Raccoons.
Raccoon. What?
Nothing.
How were you saying?
Continue.
Definitely not.
I stand by it.
Also, I want to remind Erica that there is Leagues Cup wrap-up after every night of games, and there is a tactical dive on every game in that show.
She does not want us to talk. No banter.
You should have read this email a really long time
ago. Yeah, no raccoons. That's why it's better now. Yeah.
We've already
plowed through all that stuff. Yeah.
It's interesting that we've seen Gary Smith use kind of a 4-3-3 a little bit in this one, with a flat midfield and then Hani on the left wing against Club America. And I think it was Alex Muil starting on the right wing. Use that for about a half hour, and Gary Smith has consistently done this where, like, it's almost tactical periodization, where it's like, okay, after 20 to 25 minutes, we're going to shape back into a flat 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1 or even the diamond. It has been interesting. That happens more when they're playing against the ball. When they're playing with the ball, Nashville are one of the few teams left that throws both fullbacks forward. Now, Shaq Moore, he gets to the end line and will hit crosses, so hopefully pullbacks. Daniel Lovitz, he comes in a little bit more.
Which has changed with Shaq Moore now in the team.
Right.
It used to be Lovitz got to the end line and no one attacked
him. Right. And all of it is still in possession, predicated upon Hani finding pockets of space. This is not, none of this is unusual, right? This is how teams play in possession. Nashville are just much less likely to have possession. So in this one, I mean, especially against Monterey, it's going to be, I think, banks of four relatively deep, try to keep the game in front of you, you know, force everything to the touchlines and hit on the counter. Like that blueprint from LAFC, that works pretty well. You just have to have the ability to put your foot on the ball at some point and make Monterey uncomfortable, and LAFC stopped doing that.
The one wrinkle that, and you talked about the segments of the game, they came out, and I think as Taylor mentioned on the broadcast, Gary Smith said we wanted to punch Club America in the mouth early.
Yeah.
And that first 15 plus minutes,
that game was fun.
Yeah, and they were the ones progressing the game, and they created two good chances, one off a set piece, but one out of the run of play. I would be surprised if they did that against Monterey, because I think what we talked about, Monterey's comfortable against the ball, where Club America aren't, because they're never like that. And I think that game plan was like, let's make them uncomfortable early and show them that this isn't going to be their game model for 90 minutes. I don't think that Monterey would feel that if it happened. So I don't think it's worth the risk of like, well, let's open up. But if you go down 1-0, then you're in trouble. So my expectation would be Nashville won't do that in the opening 15 minutes of this one, which also could go to Surge off the bench.
I've been very impressed by what they call the renaissance of Dax McCarty. It's not a renaissance. He just keeps
always
doing
been
Dax
here.
Stuff. But him and Anibal Godoy, you know, I remember when they signed those guys thinking, how long, what's the half-life here?
Yeah.
You know, just
and
based
the answer
on
was 6 years.
Yeah.
Forever.
Like four, yeah. Yeah.
And, but adding Sean Davis to that mix as well, because he could fill in for either of them. Mm-hmm. You could argue against certain teams. He is the preferred starter. He could play back point. He could play either shuttler position.
That's why you flew the PJ out for him.
Yeah, right? It was a really good signing. It remains a really good free agency signing.
All right. Big matches coming up here. When you have Alex Moyo playing prime.
Oh, we only have two left.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, three. No, no.
Well, we have four, but four. I meant there are only two this round.
Yeah.
That really happened
It's
fast.
Really winnowing down. We went from the insanity of like 16 matches over 3 days to, you know, this is the payoff at the end. Philly,
final
Miami.
Four.
What?
It's the final four.
I don't think you could legally say that.
Yeah.
There are four teams.
Finalissimo quattro.
Philadelphia, Miami, 7 p.m. on Tuesday night. Monterey, Nashville, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. It is midweek. It's not MLS, but it's Leagues Cup, so chaos should ensue. Should be a good time. Let's get some transfer stuff going here. Tom, this is your crack the knuckles. Prepare yourself. Let's start with Thiago Amado de Almeria.
What do you think about this one? Do you think that this is real, or do you think that this has any chance of being accepted? A $10 million bid for a player they bought for $16 million who has went and won a World Cup and continued developing?
50% sell on time.
Do you think 10 million is going to be enough?
50% in 2 years could be a $50 million.
Was this where Brian Rodriguez went on loan and then never played?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah,
part of that deal was a purchase trigger clause. It wasn't an option. And if they got promoted, it was like...
Almeria's over here like, guys, wink, wink, wink. Just send him over on loan. Yes, $10 million. We got you.
We really want to get promoted, but we clearly don't rate this player, and we don't want to trigger this option. I'm not putting much stock in Thiago Amado.
How about Cade Cowell to Bologna?
Those are real talks. And Bologna have had... at least made two bids, or they've been in active discussions is what it was described to me as a couple days ago. ESPN's Jeff Carlisle came out and gave some details. I believe it'd be a loan with a purchase option. That wasn't what I heard when I was originally, so maybe the deal structure changed. Maybe that's part of the negotiations, but I think it's time for Cade Cowell. I do. Like, if he's going to take the next step, which I was hoping to see more from him this year, his athleticism is still so alluring that I think that he's going to keep getting these chances. But this season, I was hoping to see a growth in that kind of final ball, in that final action, and just kind of hasn't happened yet. So I think
it's worth noting that everybody in the attack for the Quakes, other than Christian Espinoza, has taken a step backwards this year.
Yeah.
It hasn't been a great attacking year for the Quakes. So it is disappointing. Cade Cowell, he didn't look out of place with the U.S. in the Gold Cup, right? And as you said, high-end athleticism. He has the ability to hit line-breaking passes. Mm-hmm. He has, you know, good feet, though he has not turned that into being an effective dribbler at all. But this is the type of move. If the numbers, Jeff reported $3 million, could get up to $5.5 million with add-ons and then a sell-on fee on top of that from Bologna, who is a develop and sell team. I think this is a no-brainer. If like they have Benji Kakanovic, who was, I know,
Domino.
Who was taking?
This is why you Benji Kakanovic
was taking minutes from Cade Cowell this time last year, and they chose not to sell him. I sources confirmed that they had a 7-figure offer from AEK Athens. They signed Kakanovic to a new long-term deal. It seems like you do that and you hold on to that player because you're planning to sell the younger player from your academy, who, and like they need to start the idea for the Quakes, from everything we've been told and like just from watching them, is like they want to do what Dallas do. They want to do what Philadelphia do, which is develop and sell. And they've done the first part pretty well. They haven't done the sell part, right? And they got it. Marcos Lopez last year, the Paraguayan, or not Paraguayan, Peruvian left back. They sold him to Feyenoord. That's good work. Now you have to do it with the local kid. It's a team in a Big Five league. They're not a relegation fodder team. They're a solidly mid-table team every year. I trust Jess reporting, man.
Me too.
This seems like a no-brainer to me.
And they brought in Ayo Akinola on loan from Toronto at the end of the window, and they brought in Matthew Hoppe on loan at the end of the window.
That's a good point.
So they have
forgot about the Hoppe one.
And I, like
Matthew Hoppe is on the San Jose Earthquakes. Whoa!
That
just happened fast. But I would say with Ayo, because I don't think Ayo is a winger.
No.
But I think you could play a 4-4-2 and slide Montero out wide. They also have Useni Buda, who has not put up anywhere the production they hoped for. And you could use Kakanovic, or you could use, as I was thinking, Matthew Hoppe. That's what I've been thinking about the whole time.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, the
out wide in one of those
spots. Your most experienced winger on the roster is Jeremy Obowiesi.
That's true. But there are ways they could play without Cade Cowell. There are ways they could replace him. I'm a little let down that they didn't do more work in MLS where, okay, you haven't sold Cowell yet, so you don't have a ton of money. But, like, Michael Barrios was out there, and Diego Fagundes was clearly out there, and it's like, those are pieces you could have traded for Michael Barrios to say, either way, it's another player on our roster that makes us deeper. They are a thin team. They will be even more so without Cade Cowell. But if you get an offer like this for a player who I think someone said the offers could be there later, I'm not sure. Like, if his game does not continue to develop, I don't know that an offer like this comes around. And I do think if he falls into the right team where they use him as an outlet weapon, but they don't play through him in possession, that he could look better maybe in another league for another team than he does for San Jose. Most of the clubs that Doyle mentioned, of the Dallas's, New York's, Phillies, they often get a sale early that's a little bit of a fake one of like Matt Miazga, where Red Bulls have a pipeline. Matt Miazga was not really a part of that, but you get that one out early, you put your name on it. Wes McKennie sort of is connected as one of those for Dallas. Dallas actually has other ones. Zendejas was one of those of like, you put your name out there, you put your flag out there. It's not really the pipeline that like a Cruz Medina is now following, but you have to start somewhere, and that's often what these clubs have done.
How about, speaking of Dallas quickly, Jesus Ferreira. Cadiz, did I hear that? Did I just read it on Twitter? Was I scrolling Reddit? I don't know.
I do know that there are teams interested in Jesus. Club America had been before they bought Quiñones. They ended up going in that direction. I know that there's been Spanish and Italian teams interested in Jesus. I'm not sure what Cadiz's spending power is. because that might be because
what sort of spending power do you think they would need?
It's got to be like $8 million, I think, and then probably throw a sell on top of that, and maybe add-ons. But like, I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with their recent transfer history.
Cadiz looks sick. Just like as a town, as a place, as a general concept.
As a concept,
I think I'm close to the Straits of Gibraltar. We get in for this one. Not in geography. All right, that's it. I'm calling it right here. We'll finish with Rashad.
It's an old Phoenician settlement. Oh, it's a little strip of land on the coast, port town.
Whoa, man. Yeah. Made Abner so happy.
Hitting all the buttons. Good morning from Rashad. Love the podcast. I have a question for you. As hip-hop officially celebrates its 50th birthday on Friday, August 11th, do you have a favorite hip-hop moment in MLS or a favorite connection between hip-hop and Major League Soccer? Keep up the good work. Well, today, Goody Mob was part of the new ATL jersey drop, so that was just today. I was going to throw out there Drake recruiting Jermaine Defoe. Also, Bernadeschi and Insigne fighting over the OVO.
At least
that was like, you know, that's kind of a cursory connection, yeah. But I liked that one as well. Yo Gotti owns part of DC United, so you got that. Anything else we got from
big,
our
big boy loves Atlanta United. Yeah. He does him and 2 Chainz do the spike a lot. And
2 Andre Chainz Andre performs. Not into that.
Andre, I don't think Andre 3000 likes being in front of people.
Oh, so that wouldn't be his
part of his thing. I believe Mike Jones.
Mike Jones.
I thought you were going to do it for me.
I'm going to trample you.
There's something with Mike Jones and the Houston Dynamo. I don't know if it's official and above board or I just got someone copyright things in trouble. There's something going on there, and maybe one day we'll find out what it is.
Was Bun B involved?
With
the Houston Dynamo?
I guess the Houston Dynamo, they roll deep. So
yeah, I'm going to just UGK Houston Dynamo. Any other ones?
Isn't Macklemore a part owner of Seattle?
Okay, yeah, I got that. Yeah,
I go all the way back in, I want to say, 97 or 98 when MLS was on a different channel distribution partner. They would run promos for the Saturday night late night games, MLS Party is what they're called, and there was
that
one.
That sounds tight. I had no idea that existed.
There was one.
We might need to do something with that.
Run DMC, and it was like the commercial was supposed to be set in like a nightclub, and they're just talking with Tony Meola, Mike Burns, and Mauricio Cienfuegos, and you. Like the camera is like panning around the room, going from conversation to conversation. It just stops on Run. I think it's Run talking to Mike Burns. He's just rhyming at Mike Burns.
Sorry, say it again. Run talking to Mike Burns.
To Mike Burns, yes. To future New England Revolution GM, wow. Mike Burns. And then he rhymes. It's cool.
Yeah.
And then like Mauricio
Burns
Cienfuegos,
is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And all right. Runs like, all right, who's next? And Mauricio Cienfuegos puts his hand up and he's like, Cienfuegos, what rhymes with Cienfuegos? And like the camera cuts away. So for MLS fans of a certain vintage,
old heads,
what rhymes with Cienfuegos? If you say that to like someone over 40, if you say that to Elliot Tomes, 100%. He will 100%,
that's the only person I know.
He will 100% know what that means.
Charlie Fiction.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for us. We will be back on Wednesday.
Can we do predictions? We haven't done that the whole time.
Yeah, we haven't. We have somehow avoided that.
Shoot.
Philly.
2 semifinals.
Philly Nashville.
Oh.
Wow.
Philly Monterey.
Miami Monterey.
All right. Thanks for listening. Yeah,
Where you at?
I'll say Philly Nashville.
Okay. Interesting. All right, that's it for us. Enjoy your week. Tuesday night. League's Cup semifinals and last season pass on Apple TV. Tune in. We'll see you on Wednesday. Adios.